Welcome back to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. How is everybody? It's been quite a busy week the last few days. We were traveling around a little bit here and there, seeing some family, seeing some friends. You know, all the COVID stuff is over. Everybody's negative. And yeah, basically, I've just been reeling down the adrenaline from the Jose Gonzalez concert. I hope you guys enjoyed the last episode, like just sharing some clips that my friend Kati sent me of our performance. I'm just, again, so thankful for that. There's two guys named Ralph who were in charge of me being there, and this guy Tan. Thanks to Marcus, you know, for being such a great partner there. He played so well, and he took it so seriously, which is really great. And, thanks to Jose for, you know, I don't know if he had any say in the approval, but, you know, he was really cool. And I just really hope that I can do more shows like that. I really enjoyed playing to 1,000 people. I mean, if that's like your thing, then that's your thing. Then who wouldn't want to go and do that? You know what I mean? Like, if your thing is to play for crowds, then 1,000 people is a perfect crowd. I was having that thought too. Not too long after the concert, where I thought, you know, I don't have some crazy big goal of achieving something on the levels of like Ed Sheeran or Louis Capaldi or Justin Bieber. Not to just name three white dudes, but I don't have the same goal. I'm not goal oriented in the way that, like, I need to sell stadiums. Like, that's not. I don't think that's a reality at all. And I think if I were to have that goal, I would just always be sort of living a disappointment in a way. But my goal would to get to a level like Jose is, for example. Like, he's able to travel to different countries around the world and have enough of a following in these different countries that he can travel there and play, you know, 3-4 cities. And even in a city like Munich, which can, you know, it can be behind on things, even to go there and play 1,000 people, it's pretty great. You know, he sold his ticket for like 48 euros, which is steep. You know, I don't know if I would ever really want to charge that much. I don't know if I could stomach it. It's just so much to ask. But then again, if you go see like the big leagues, if you go to see someone like Coldplay or Ed Sheeran or I don't know. My mom loves Michael Bublé. I'm sure those tickets aren't under 50 euros or 50 bucks. So then I guess if I got to that level, I'd have to just deal with that. I'm sure that's okay. you know, you got to make a living. But what I'm trying to say is I could imagine getting to that level where I'm playing 1,000 people venues. I would be totally happy with that. Theaters, you know, larger sized open venues, open air venues, festivals. That's my jam. Like, that's where the good, like, you can make a good living there. You're not so extremely famous that you can't walk down the street or something. You know, you can just still live a comfortable life and provide and be cozy and be doing what you want to do. So that's kind of the goal, really, for me. Today's going to be a very special episode because, I mentioned in the last episode at the beginning on that walk that there is potentially something happening with 12 songs, with 12 songs for 12 friends, my 2018 album. And there's sort of an update going on. So we are moving forward as of now. We are, you know, hashing out some issues in the agreement. You know, he wants a certain percentage of the master rights of this album indefinitely, which is a hard pill to swallow. But then I have to look at the reality of, hey, you know, it's been 4 years. This album hasn't done what you wanted. Maybe this is the sacrifice that's worth making in order to see it go somewhere else and see it through. So that's one of the things that we have to work out. And there's also like the certain things with distribution. But like basically, in general, I think this is going to work. I think this is going to happen. That this new Swedish record label is going to pick up 12 songs for 12 friends. And so for people, I talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but basically what that means is that it's not going to be a reissue. It won't be like a new, like a brand new release, like it never happened. But what we will do most likely is take some of these songs like James and put them onto freshly compiled playlists or like album compilations. Like a label's compilation would be like one song from this band, one song from that band, one song from me. And you can pitch these compilations fresh and new to playlists and third parties like that. So they could take these older songs and give them some new life in that way. And also the plan would be that I record a new live EP. So then you're also saying, I'm going to take a song again like James and get it recorded properly, you know, quote unquote live, because I would probably film it. So you have a video too and like breathe some new life into these older songs. I'm a better musician now. I sing a little bit stronger. I sing a little deeper now. I think playing James at the Mufadhalle was like the best I've ever played it. And I don't even like to talk that way, but I just think it's just true. You know, you just need more years to get better at what you practice at. So, we would probably also record some of these songs live, create a new product, like a live EP, 4 or 5 of these songs and re-release, like, or just release that in addition to making the compilations. 'Cause then you've got two different pathways into getting new listeners and new attention to these songs. And, you know, including people that already know me and my music going to these going, oh, he's got like a new live version of, you know, let's, I don't know, Eye to Eye or something, like some song you like. There's a chance I'll be doing it fresh. So it could be very cool. We just have to hash out some details. We have to, you know, make some sacrifices, make a written agreement, but it looks really good. It looks really promising. So what I wanted to do today to make today's episode special was I would like to go through this old album, 12 Songs for 12 Friends, as it stands today, still currently owned, operated, distributed, performed, and published. Well, not performed 100%, but everything else 100% by me, Jordan Prince. I'm going to get into the performers on this. I'm going to get into the engineer on this, the stories around it. You know, I want to talk about this album, because to be looking at it through a different lens these days has rekindled a lot of passion that I had for this album in terms of like the history around it, the way that we did it, what the stories and the people behind the songs, just the whole feeling around it and how special it is for me and how special it, you know, it remains to me. And I think it's just cool to look at it in a fresh way, break it down and talk about it a little bit. This would be a perfect episode to have had Mo on, because I think he does ask really good questions. But right now, I'm not certain when we are going to get him back. I always keep saying, yeah, maybe next week, but he's just a really busy guy. And we haven't been talking so much recently. There's no animosity or anything wrong. We're just busy. You know, we have our own things going on. So I miss him. And if he does hear this, I hope to have you back on soon. But let's take a look at 12 Songs for 12 Friends by Jordan Prince, released, I believe it was May 25th. Oh, no, May 18th, 2018, I think. And the release concert was May 25th. I'm pretty sure that's right. It came out in May 2018. 15 tracks, including what was my idea, and I'm really proud of it, was these there's three tracks that are the voices of the actual people that the songs are about. There's Introduction, which I love when an album has an introduction. And it's literally just this clip of my friend George, who is the inspiration for the song My Little Bear, talking, saying this expression that was like his and mine, like our inside joke. When we played together in this band, I don't know if actually, let me show you what this sounds like, and then I can tell you what it means.
Hey there, Jojo. Just dropping by to say, always remember to flip it, reverse it, spin it, kick it, put it in the show.
Okay, I had to stop it right there before the next song starts. So he says, kick it, flip it. Always remember
to flip it,
reverse it, spin it,
kick it,
put it in the show. So that was always our inside joke, because when we played in this band, Big Lemois, we would always play around with so many different weird sound effects and pedals. And, you know, that band takes an enormous amount of inspiration, almost thievery, from Radiohead. And we always really wanted to be like in the shadow of Radiohead and try and follow in their footsteps and try different things like them. And so we would take like our vocals and put them through pedals and go like crazy things and make it just try and find new weird sounds that we can incorporate into the music to make it sort of special or different. And that sort of became the joke that we would, I think it was me and George alone started this, and then it spread out to the rest of the band. But it was like, let's, you know, like for the sake of just being weird, taking something like, I don't know, anything, like the sound of a bottle smashing on the ground, and like we could just take it and like flip it and like reverse it and like add reverb and then delay and then echo and then you put it in the show, you know? So that's where that stems from. But I also thought it's a really great way to kick off this album, because it's kind of vague, but also it's also energetic. You're also hearing something like, hey, I just wanted to say, like, go do it. Like, go put it, you know, flip it, kick it, put it in the show. And I thought that was such a perfect way. I didn't want to incorporate that phrase of his into the other instrumental tracks. There's two. There's Cruise Street, which shows you absolutely how deeply personal this album is to me. Like, even the instrumental tracks, where you hear the other voices, like on the album Cruise Street, you will hear my friend James Kelly, Shannon Little, Cody Hopper, Todd Gurley. These are the people from, I would say, like the first chapter of my past in terms of my friend group. Cody Hopper was my, you know, longtime best friend. This, I'm going to get into all that later. But basically, Cruise Street was the first chapter of Friends, and Lakeshore Drive was the other one. And the reason I still like these titles is because Cruise Street was the street in downtown Corinth where I grew up, where Cruise Street is the street that had the record store Top Shelf Records, where me and all these people would hang out all the time. And Lakeshore Drive is the address street of where the University of New Orleans is in New Orleans on Lakeshore Drive. And that's where the school was, and that's where I met all the other people in this. You know, you've got like Bruno, Doria, Matt Martinez, Vivi, all these people. So you can also hear them talking in that one. Efi, of course. So I didn't want to put George into the Lakeshore Drive one because it was such a nice isolated clip. And I thought it was a perfect way to kick off the album. So we start with that, and it goes straight into Stars, which is really the first track on the album, which kicks off with a big bang. Doom. Doom, 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 doom. So Stars is the song about Matthew Paul Martinez. Matt Martinez is such an interesting guy, such a good friend. I miss him a lot. I miss him like all the time. I feel like every time I go visit New Orleans, a little part of him has changed and grown, which I think that's probably normal for everybody. Like a little part of him has changed and grown, but then a little part of him is always the same, like just for me. Like I see this little twinkle in his eye, or like this little way he moves his mouth, or this way that he responds to something, and it feels like it's just his physicality telling me that it's still there for me. And like it's, I don't know, like this, it, that, like that his love will always be, like, I don't know if it makes any sense. It's just like I see this part of him that's always been there through the new things. And that's, I think that's the best, is when you have a friend who you do see being shaped and molded by their future, or by their past, I guess to say, but that there's still like this core thing of like who they are and who they are to you. And that stays the same. And that's so important for long lasting friendships. Although we don't talk so much these days because I moved. And this was also kind of a really hard thing with this album, was I moved at the end of 2015. So 2016 was just a year of getting my bearings, felt very like loose and flimsy, you know, my being here didn't feel too real yet. 2017 was this year where like I had written all these songs, I was missing my friends a lot, and I was putting all my effort into like longing for them on stage, creating all these reasons to think about them and write about them and talk about them. And it became that I had all these songs, and it became like, now I need to do, like, I should make this into an album. But yeah, that's for later, actually, because there's a particular song on this album that I had to write in order to fit onto the album. And I remember, like, trying to crowdfund this record in the beginning with a company from Berlin that wanted to help me crowdfund it, but it was kind of like, it was like GoFundMe, but it was a private company based in Berlin, and I don't remember how I met them, but it didn't work out, obviously, but we still got the album, so that's great. So Stars is the song about Matt Martinez, and let me go here to the song lyrics. We can talk about that a little bit here. So here's how Stars goes. My God, you're growing up so fast. I can barely keep up with you. And now you've got yourself a son on your lap, and my heart was swelling up with the news. I'm so proud of you. Let me throw my arms around your neck. I tear up when I reflect on all the love you show. My brother, I've seen your worst. Burning eyes keep pushing sleep away. Now you've turned yourself into a man. Burning stars keep all the darkness at bay. And I'm so proud of you. Let me throw my arms around your neck. I tear up when I reflect on all the love you show. Oh, Matthew. You know, this song basically came out of a place of Matt had gotten his girlfriend Jenna pregnant when they were on a Europe trip. I think they traveled through in 2015. I think it was the year, it was like the same month that I came to Munich, like for good. I think like a few weeks after I moved here, they visited. And in that year, I was actually playing Efe's brother's rock festival in the south of Germany called Gruben Grooves. They haven't had it for a couple of years now, I think. Because of the pandemic, but I was booked to play there, so I was like, oh, great, you guys are coming. Well, we didn't know they were pregnant yet, so you know, they were just doing a tour, and they were going to Portugal and Italy and other places, and they came to Germany to see me and Efe, and then we went to the festival together. Jenna played, she's a very talented singer and musician, and she played piano in my band, and Mo, our very own Mo Bat, played bass. There's one video on my YouTube of us playing together at Gruben Grooves. And Tim Hecking, who's also a huge part of this record and everything else I do, played drums on that concert. So it was a really funny sort of makeshift band, you know, all kind of pushed together to make something work. And it was a lot of fun. And we did that concert. And Matt that year won, he won it was supposed to be like a poetry battle. Like, the prize was a 3-liter bottle of Enzian, this Bavarian schnapps. It's like a really strong, clear liquor that they make from the root of this Enzian flower here in the south of Germany. And it's really popular in her hometown. And if you, if whoever won the poetry, like a love letter to Enzian, would win. But Matt is a very talented rapper. You can see both of us rapping on a couple of different videos on my YouTube. but we dropped, he dropped a rap about Enzian that was like 2 pages long and was so cool and so intense. And he was so brave and so badass on stage and so confident. And he, even though most of those Germans probably didn't understand what he was saying because it was so fast and stuff, he won them over and he won the bottle like no problem, like no competition. He blew them out of the water. So we're at this festival. Jenna played with me. Matt won this huge bottle. He's going around to the crowd pouring this huge, I mean, it's an enormous, like, I don't know, 3 liters. I think it's like a couple of gallons or maybe a gallon. But just like pouring all this liquor into people's mouths, and him and Jenna are just like chugging and chugging and chugging. And it's so crazy. And Matt and I are like trashing the backstage, and it's such a mess. Everything's so crazy. And pretty quickly, not too long after that, we found out they had gotten pregnant in Portugal just before they came to Germany. So they were pregnant and drinking like fish. But everything's absolutely fine. And it didn't matter at all. Everything was cool. But it was just a funny, like, oh my God moment. And this song came from the fact that, like, they had gotten pregnant, and the following January, I guess, yeah, the following January, they got married on New Year's Day. So I traveled into, back to New Orleans that following January. I performed at their wedding, and I sang, I think it's a Todd Lundgren song. Like, it was late last night, and I knew that something wasn't right. There was not another soul inside, only you, only you. What's the name? It doesn't matter. Anyway, I sang that song. When I see the light in your eyes. Anyway, I sang it at their wedding, Jordan, come on now. And they were having a kid and Matt was growing up. And like the next time I visited, they had moved into a house together and now he was married. He was the first one in the group who was married. Well, that's not true, but he was the first one of like the immature idiots like me who got married. And then he was having a kid and he was like this, he was putting his career on hold. He was taking care of his son. He just was like, so he was maturing despite, like, he and I have such the same flaws. Like, we both have addictive behavior. We both make bad decisions and we both, I don't know, lean into bad habits, and we can be so immature and so stupid. But then also we like can share such an intense, overwhelming amount of love for people. And he was just dumping all this love into his son. And when I came back to visit and I saw like, oh my God, he's grown up. Like, he replaced, you know, these burning red eyes, you know, for being up for like 24 hours into burning stars that, like, you know, this powerful star in the sky that pushed all this darkness away from his life, and so proud. And what I really love, my favorite part about this song is finally at the end of the last chorus, I'm saying like, let me throw my arms around your neck. I tear up when I reflect on all the love you show. And when I like exclaim his name, like, oh, Matthew, this guitarist that we hired for the album, his name is Avi, he just went into this unbelievable solo. I have to just show you, it's so cool. Oh no. Here we go. man, he just rips that song in half. Like, what a insanely, like, what a melodic guitar solo. That's one of my favorite moments on the whole album. And I think it's also a perfect song to introduce the record, because it's so, it's like this album is about love. It's about these people. It's about friendship and life-changing events and people getting older and people growing apart. And it's about life. And, you know, life can be so beautiful. And this song is just, I had the idea to start the record off with this song while in the studio. We had recorded a few songs. This one came around. And before I even had the woodwinds, like, this song pretty much thrives on the woodwinds, like the clarinets and the flutes and stuff, until the solo at the end. Those are the two, like, most shining instruments, I think. And we didn't even have the woodwinds yet. We just had the bass and the guitar and the drums, and it has this, like, bum, 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 and just starts off this big positive thing. And I knew, I looked over at my friend Jake, who worked on the album as the bass player, and I was like, man, we got to start the album off with this one. This has got to be it. So very happy with how that one turned out. And I don't remember the order. The only songs, I remember the last one that I wrote for the album. And I remember the first one that I wrote for the album. And I remember the first one that we recorded for the album. But I don't remember the order of anything else. The very first one that was written for this album that was the inspiration for the whole album was actually James. I wrote that in my parents' house in Counts, Tennessee. Pretty crazy. And which means they've been there for, time just flies by. And the last one that I wrote for this album was number 6, High School, about my friend Shannon. I needed a song about her, and I needed another song for the record. And I don't have any idea how that song came to be, because it feels like so complex to me when I look at it, just from it's a pretty complicated guitar part. And then the whole song shifts into a completely different genre towards the end. So I don't know how that song came alive, but anyway, we have a long way to go here. So up next, so Stars, this big, bold, loud song ends, and it flows right into a saucy little calm, magical little jazz number called My Little Bear. So My Little Bear, I mean, this lap steel guitar is the shining bright white light on this song. It really carries the whole song all the way through. It's really amazing what Luke Goetze did with this. So My Little Bear, another favorite of mine, because it's so unlike anything I've ever had the opportunity to record before. My Little Bear is this, it's, you know, I never expected it to be so jazzy. There is on my SoundCloud from a long time ago, from like 2016, there's a song on my SoundCloud. It might even be privated, but I don't know, maybe not. And it's the original version of My Little Bear. I don't know if any of you guys ever really heard it. I didn't promote it too much at all, but the original version was done. I had written James already, and I had the idea, okay, I'm going to do 12 songs for 12 friends. And in 2016, which is funny because I was still very much a newcomer in the Munich music scene, there was this film director from the, we say the HFF, the HFF, which is the film school here in Munich. A student at the HFF reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested if they make a little like mini documentary about me, which is unbelievable since I had accomplished absolutely fucking nothing. I hadn't done anything. I had nothing. I had one EP that I had put out. I had the Parade EP, but it didn't even do well, and I wasn't even touring. So I don't know why they picked me. I don't know. But I thought, this is going to look great. I can send this to people at home, and it could look like I'm really doing business here, you know? And I said, sure. It's this guy named David. And he's a very sweet guy. Sometimes I still see him around, but, you know, not so often. But he's a very, very nice guy. And we basically made the plan, like, what's the story of the documentary? What's the goal? And I was like, well, you know, I'm working on a song for a friend. Maybe we could make it like about that and about this journey of making this album. And so we figured everything out. Basically, I wrote this original version of My Little Bear for the documentary. I had to finish it. I had to show it to him. He had to, you know, I assume he had to like it before we film it. And he did, thankfully. And I played it in this very weird tuning. I don't know why or how I was in this strange tuning, but I played everything different from normal. And I wrote these weird chords, and it was very fast. And yeah, it's a completely different, I wonder if I still have it. It's a completely different song from the one that is on this record. And let me see. Oh, I'm not even signed in here. Never mind. So let me go back to the lyrics. Yeah, I had written this original version. So he went and he followed me writing it in my apartment, the other apartment I lived in before the one that I'm in now. And he came with me to Tim's studio and filmed us recording it in the studio. And yeah, I have the file somewhere on a jump drive, but I never shared it. I have nothing against it. I think it comes off a little too serious at times. Like, I'm not that serious of a person. I can be. But this documentary comes off very serious. It's black and white. It's called Behind Closed Eyes. And I don't know, it just didn't like give off it didn't really feel like me at the end, which is funny because it's a documentary. It's not bad. And I'm grateful for the experience and everything. And it's still nice. It just, you know, it wasn't really like me. So that's why I never really posted anything about it. But anyway, so that's the original version. So then here we are, we come down to 2017. I'm recording this album, 12 Songs for 12 Friends. We come across My Little Bear, and I'm completely underprepared. I'm not sure, do we want to copy and paste the same exact style of this song into the project file of this one? Like, just say, okay, here's the same tempo, let's find the same chords and just do it. And I felt a little bit like Joni Mitchell, in the way that I was the least prepared one, because there's a lot of famous stories of her. Like, for example, she showed up on the stage of The Last Waltz with the band, and Levon Helm and them would be like, okay, let's play your song. What key is it in? And she'd say, I don't know. I just play these tunings. Like, she would play with all these weird tunings and play guitar by ear, which is like me. And they would get so mad because she couldn't say, oh, it's A sharp, and then it's into D sharp, into, you know, E flat minor or whatever. Like, she didn't know. And I rarely know that stuff unless I'm playing in standard and I really look at what I'm playing. So I felt like her because I got so frustrated. It was maybe the most frustrating song to write on the whole album. I felt insecure. I felt stupid. I got angry. I stormed out of the room. I sat on the sofa in the lobby. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I don't belong here. This is not where I'm supposed to be. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. I was in a room with all these like music school kids. Like, you know, this is nothing to Vivi. She was definitely the least invasive one, but like, she had gone to Juilliard, and like the drummer Nick was a very well-studied, you know, New Orleans jazz drummer. And then we had Jake, who went to the Liverpool School of Performing Arts. And you had all these just music nerds in there talking about A flat minor diminished with a nine, blah, 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 blah. And there I was like, I don't know what to play. So we had to like transpose the song into standard tuning. And we found like, okay, if I put the capo there and I play like this, then it looks like this. And we finally shaped it into what you hear on the final record. But it, man, you know, all these guys like, you know, measuring their dicks at the table of how much they know about jazz music theory and stuff. It drove me crazy. It really drove me crazy. And I really thought, I don't want to do this song anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. Like, if it's my song and I don't understand what's going on enough and getting this frustrated that no one can simplify it, then maybe we shouldn't do it. But thankfully, in the end, we made it work, and it ended up sounding great, actually. In the end, Nick Solnick played some of the most beautiful drums on the whole album on this song. He also had the suggestion that I, at the very, very end, do this particular singing note. That was Nick's idea, this eyes closed, that last little deep. I think originally I had just done like, with your eyes closed. And he was like, no, it's jazz, come on. With your eyes closed. I felt like Chet Baker or something. So very difficult, very complicated song to write or to transpose into what it became. But the groove was great. The soul was in there. And the lyrics, you know, they're so innocent, but it was like, my little bear, head in the air, when all the doubt has left your snout, I'll nuzzle next to prayer. Like, that's just meaning, because George can be very insecure, and he's so extremely talented. So this is kind of like saying, like, the day that you're confident is the day that, like, my prayers have been answered, you know? My little bird, whose songs I've heard, your vocal fountain shakes the mountain each and every word. My little pup, please don't give up. Let's go and play. The rest can wait. Let's try to fill our cup. Like, filling your cup is like an expression for let's go, you know, carpe diem, you know. My little stone, how far you've been thrown and where you land, till death you'll stand, your fate becomes your own. That might be my favorite line in the song. It has the most sort of poetic, phrasings to it. Like, you can make whatever you need in your life to make sense out of that. But I like the idea that once a stone has been thrown somewhere, usually that's where that stone is for like 1,000 years. You know, if you're in the ocean and you pick up a rock and you throw it like, you know, 2 meters over and it falls, that rock is probably not going to be touched or moved for like forever again. So I like the idea of like this little stone, that's how far they've been thrown and where they land until death they'll stand. Your fate becomes your own, you know? So that's into the first chorus. And then, what I'm describing, all these things like bear, bird, pup, stone, are all these things that are outside. So I thought, when I'm outside, I see these things and I think of you. So it says, I'm so happy to be outside with you, where you'll always be when it's you I need, because George doesn't live here with me. I don't live in New Orleans anymore. So if I think about him being all these things that I see outside, then whenever I'm outside, I'll always be with him. That was the message. My little boat, keeping me afloat, sturdy and small, mast holding strong, we're sailing note to note, because, you know, he's such a good musician, we had this band together, he's the strong, powerful sail, his voice carrying us through the songs. My humble friend, I do pretend that you're here with me, undoubtedly tying knots in my loose ends. I'm also really happy with that one. He is a very humble friend, and at the time I did like try to sort of pretend that he was there with me. And I like the expression tying knots in my loose ends, sort of just like solving my problems. And that's, you know, goes back to, I'm so happy to be outside with you, where you'll always be where it's you I need, or when it's you I need. My little bear, with all your hair, please sing for me another song with your eyes closed. So, you know, George is, he's Nicaraguan. And his family's from there, and he was born in Miami, and he's Nicaraguan, whatever. And he's just got like the thickest mop of like dark, luscious brown hair. It's so beautiful. And I would always run my fingers through it. He's such a sweet, fun, humble guy. And you could always just be like, George, your hair looks great. And like, just pet him kind of. And he's like Robin Williams, like his forearms and his hands are just covered in thick black hair. And his chest, and he's so funny. He's just like this, I don't know. I don't want to like demasculate him or anything. Like, he's just this kind of like small guy, but he's so hairy. He's just like my little bear, you know? So that's how that's the story of that song. I'll do a little bit more. I guess we'll have to make this into more parts. But up next is basically the foundational, like this, the staple, the, like, what's the best way to describe this? Like, the Stronghold Foundational Waving Flag textbook, like home base purpose song of the album is obviously this one.
James, are you smiling? Are you smiling at me?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost hard for me to hear the way that I'm singing that now compared to how I sung it at that concert, but you know, it's still got its charm. But James, yeah, James was the very first song. I wrote that at my parents' house in Tennessee. Part of me, like, hated playing it for a while. It ended up being the ones that the Germans migrated to the most. Let me look here. I think it's the one with the most streams. Yeah, it's the highest streamed song of the album. You know, it's whatever. Oh no, it was released May 25th. It was released May 25th, and the release concert must have been May 31st that year. Yeah. Anyway, not important. Right. So James was like the centerpiece song of the album and was the first one that I did. And I didn't like playing it for a long time. We played it at, you know, 2017. We played a lot of shows, a lot of festivals. That year, I really thought I was about to break through and, like, be a famous musician, honestly. We played so many amazing festivals that year. And I really thought, I've got it now, and this is it, and this is how I always want to live my life. Or, I mean, that's not what I mean. Like, I thought that was how it was going to be. I still want to do that. that didn't change, but it, you know, I just didn't. It didn't last. And we were playing so many shows, and I played that song so many times. And then even into 2018, you know, the album came out. We had a great release concert. People sang along to the song. People knew the song James enough by that point that when we got to the release concert, they sang along, which is really crazy. You know, that gives you this impression that you're really, like, about to break through when people are singing your song at your concert. It's crazy. So yeah, then, you know, we didn't tour so much the rest of that year. We played a few shows. 2019 came around. We had another big show in February of that year. And then that basically was like the beginning of a huge break for me. And I didn't play James from that concert in February 2019 until the show on October 11th, 2022. So a huge time away from it, and I think I needed that break because I sort of rekindled a new love for it, but for playing it, not for listening to it. You know, honestly, if I were to re-release this album, what I would do is I would change the order of the songs. I would probably put James lower on the list. I'm trying to think of, like, where would be a good spot for James, maybe lower on the album, like after Great Big Light or something, because My Little Bear is almost 5 minutes long and it's a little slow. It's like a little, it's a ballad, it's a jazz ballad. And then you get to James, which is also a ballad, but it's a rock ballad. And it's just, you know, it's not 5 minutes, but it's over 4 minutes. And it's, you know, I think it's the beginning of the album is a little slow there until you get to the fifth song, which is Tame Impala Nights, which really kicks everything back up into eighth gear. But anyway, James, you know, let's look at the lyrics for that. That's also, James for me is a song that I had to learn to love the lyrics for this song, because when I wrote them, I'm surprised that I kept them, because that doesn't really, for me, it doesn't really sound like me. Because it's so repeatable and so simple. I mean, this sounds, I don't want it to sound like I'm shitty. Like, it just doesn't sound like what I think I sound like. It sounds like I'm singing someone else's song. Because usually I try to say, like, full sentences. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, my humble friend, well, I do pretend that you're here with me undoubtedly tying knots in my loose ends. You know, it has, like, a nice rhyme pattern. It has, like, three different rhymes in it. And it's still a sentence, and it still makes sense. And James is so like, are you smiling? Are you smiling at me? Are you crying? Are you trying to sleep? Are you driving? Have you had too much to drink? keep on writing. You've got too much to sing. I know I was a heavy burden on your soul, but James, please know you'll always be my rock and roll. And you know, like being someone's rock and roll, it sounds cool. It sounds like a Rolling Stones line or something, but I don't know. I had to learn to appreciate the lyrics because they weren't strong in my opinion. James, are you playing? Are you playing with me? James, are you praying? Are you chasing your dreams? I know I was a heavy burden on your soul, but James, please know you'll always be my rock and roll. James, you were shaking up everything. James, you were angry, but you were always so sweet. And then I know I was a heavy burden on your soul, but James, please know you always... Blah, 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 blah. So yeah, really, really, really simple, easy to repeat. Maybe that's why this is the most streamed song, because, you know, you always know the verse is going to start off with the name James. You know, you always know the chorus is going to end with the phrase rock and roll. So maybe James just has to be what James is, you know, and... playing it at that concert last week, I definitely rekindled sort of a fresh respect for it and how it makes people feel. And I have to respect that. I have to appreciate that. Let me see how we are on time. I'll do one more and then I got to wrap up here. But next up is Tame Impala Nights, which, in terms of just like catchy and fun, this might be, I'm really proud of the melody in this song.
Remember when we all used to take those hits to the door, and we all bowed into your eyes, and we laughed, come and cried.
Like, that's my most Beatles-y song. Definitely, definitely, definitely my most Beatles-y song. That's 100% inspired by the Beatles. Definitely. I'm really happy with how that song came out. It's a song where it's really fun to play with a rock band, nice and fast like this on the record. It's also a really great song to play slowed down on an acoustic because it has such a nice melody and cool chord changes. And I'm really proud of this song. And it basically is like, it's about my friend Matt Bigelow. And the lyrics are so straight on the nose, but it's really fun for me. Hey, you know, it's like, remember when we all used to take those hits to the dome? We smoked a little bit of the ganja back in college, you know? So it's like, hey, remember when we used to do that and we'd all get in your car? Well, I can just say the lyric, like, remember when we all used to take those hits to the dome and we all piled into your ride and we laughed content and fried? Remember when we all used to jam all night at the house? Didn't matter how small the space. I can still clearly see your face when we found that riff, that sweet motif that pulled it all together. It was always now or never. And I hope that you're not mad because you got to understand that I miss you. That's specifically talking about, I hope that you're not mad that I left the band and moved, because you have to understand that I miss you. I miss you. I miss you every day. Remember when we all used to jump and scream at the shows and your bass was fat and low, but your smile, oh man, it glows. I wish I could have had just one more day in your car, just another ticket to ride. That's my homage to the Beatles, Ticket to Ride. Just another ticket to ride, just another Tame Impala night. So Tame Impala Nights, that's always referring to, you know, maybe this is more for my mom to get it. There's a band called Tame Impala, that we all were obsessed, religiously obsessed with in college. I mean, they're still a great band. But they had an album or two that came out during the college years that just took over our world. And that's what we would do. We would, you know, play concerts and then get in the car and go hang out at his house and just listen to Tame Impala super loud in the car. And that was like a lot of great memories of mine are just being in his car listening to music. Selfless man, you are my friend. I would do whatever you needed. From my heart, I will repeat it. And I hope that you're doing fine. You and your wife are on my mind. That's a shout out to his wife, Pats, who's actually Vivi's cousin. Because I miss you. Yes, I miss you. I miss you every day. And the bridge, it's hard to say goodbye. And the distance just makes me want to die. But I hope somewhere that you're staying high. Oh, my dearest Biggie, light one up for me because I miss you. That's funny. This actually became kind of a stoner track, even though he nor myself really ever, you know, did that often or anything by any means at all. It was never a huge part of our lives. It was just around in college. So sometimes you joined in, but, it's funny. This kind of lyrics, like I hope somewhere you're staying high. Light one up for me because I miss you. But it also sounds nice. Like, light one up for me, man. It's also like this, I don't know. It's like an pouring a whiskey bottle out on the ground. Like, this one's for you. Yeah, I mean, I visited New Orleans, I think it was about the time that we were recording this, a little before, a little after. And I played that song for him in his living room, really slowed down on the acoustic and sort of just spelled out the lyrics for him. And he really liked it. And you can hear him talk on the song Lakeshore Drive as the song is crescendoing into its peak. You can hear him talking about how there was this crazy coincidence. We had met through, I guess we met through Vivi, I think. And in the Big Lemois world, we met like through this band. I was brought into the band as the final and like outside party, like joining this group. Because I could write songs, I could sing, and I also could play some guitar. So they brought me in as like to try and help make the sound work. And that's where I met Biggie. And the funny thing was, at the time, I was living in, like, right on the cusp of Orleans Parish on the lakefront in New Orleans at Bruno Doria's house. And Bruno's song, we'll get to that later. I was living with Bruno and his, at the time, girlfriend, Sarah, in this house. I was renting a room in their house. And one day, I drove home from school or whatever, and I get in my driveway and I look over, and two driveways over is Matt Bigelow. And we realized that he lives two houses down from me. And this is, by the way, this is one of those like mini complex street. It's like you're on a main street where houses are all separated by yards and stuff, but then you turn onto like a small street, and this is like house connected to house connected to like they're side by side. There is no gap, you know. There's like driveway, a little patch of grass, driveway. You know, it's like right next to each other, and the private space you have is in the backyard. So that's where you don't, you know. There's like a fenced-in backyard, but the front is really just like side to side to side. So when I say he's like two houses down, like he is so close to me, he's literally like three cars distance away from me. And it was so funny. And we laughed about it. And when I found out that he was my neighbor, then I just got obsessed with him. And that's what you hear him talking about in Lakeshore Drive, is when he says, you know, he was in this long distance relationship for so long with Pats for like, you know, years. And he was always really reclusive, and he always liked to stay inside in the dark, playing his video games. I mean, I get that. I really do. But like, I was obsessed with him. I thought he was the coolest person ever. And I did love and do love him. And I really wanted to spend more time with him. So I would always run over and knock on his door and say like, hey, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bigelow, whatever, like, is Matt home? Or like, I would just be like, come outside, come outside, come outside. And sometimes he really didn't want to do it. He didn't want to get out of bed, but I made him do it. And then it was always a good time. So, that's the story of that. And yeah, I definitely still deeply miss Matt Bigelow. He's a really beautiful, really beautiful soul. Guys, I'm going to stop there. I'll make a little note that we got through Tame Impala Nights. For those who know me personally and listen to this, look, if you find this a little egotistical or boring or anything at all, and you think I shouldn't do another episode about it, I trust you to let me know, because I don't want to be doing anything stupid on this show. I'm just talking from the heart. The album's on my mind right now. Came out over 4 years ago. It's crazy. So I just thought maybe it's time to talk about it. Guys, thank you so much. If you did enjoy today's episode, make sure to go give us a rating or a review or a comment or something on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. Go follow us. In the show notes, there's the link to our YouTube and our TikTok and Instagram. Go give us a follow. Just tell a friend about the show. Let's grow this artsy fartsy family. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week. Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.